There are so many fabulous faraway places to see, such as Mexico, Sweden, Hawaii, Japan, and Capri. There's so many exciting and wonderful places, mountains and jungles.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You're listening to Thought-Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark.
So why stay there when there are so many fabulous faraway places to see? Why should Spain and Tahiti and Rio just be only names?
Gabriel Walensky with us. He is a highly regarded software developer whose book, 6 Million Crucifixions, How Christian Teachings About Jews Paved the Road to the Holocaust, explores the church's role before, during, and after World War II. Gabriel, hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, my great. How are you?
Oh, and by the way, thank you so much for being here. I think this issue in and of itself needs to come to the fore, and we have to take a look at everything that's going on and the whys of it. So let me take you back to the very beginning for you. What was it that caused you to put this to pen?
Well, the story really begins long ago when I was a teenager. Ever since that time, I had become very, very interested in World War II, and particularly the Holocaust. And one of the things that really interested me about it was the nature of the Holocaust. I couldn't really quite comprehend at the time why it was that the Germans and their helpers hated Jews so much. I just couldn't understand how, just because they heard propaganda, people would actually hate people, other people, to the point of doing what the Germans did to the Jews. So I researched this for a long time. I read many, many books, and no matter how many books I read about the war and about the Holocaust, I really never understood until I finally did. And when I finally did, I decided that it was probably a good idea to share that insight with others who may have been asking themselves the same question.
Now, by the way, if I go back, and I have not done the research that you have, but if I go back and take a look at what occurred during the Second World War, the Germany was basically like we are right now. It was in economic turmoil. There was no sense of identity. And Hitler took advantage of a good situation for him. And what he did was he gave the Germans identity, caused them to band together. He connected them together. And one of the major connections was he needed somebody to point at to say, it's all your fault. And I think that in and of itself was a prime reason that the Holocaust occurred in the first place.
That is absolutely true. However, keep in mind that the hatred for Jews had existed prior to Hitler by many, many centuries. As a matter of fact, almost by 2,000 years. So what Hitler had to do, once he started to give his political speeches and once he started to really lead the Nazi Party in the early 20s, he actually basically tapped into a pre-existing hatred.
Yeah.
So he didn't really have to convince the Germans and then the Austrians and everybody else that the Jews were hateful and evil and guilty for capitalism and communism and all kinds of other nonsense. He didn't really need to convince them of any of this because they already believed it, and they already hated Jews for all of it, just like their predecessors had hated Jews for bringing the Black Plague to Europe during the Middle Ages.
Oh, sure.
And another myth that had been around for a long time.
Now, Gabriel, I also understand that there was, during that time period, that Hitler also had a contract out on the Pope. He was going to kill the Pope, which they didn't get to do, because not only was Nazism political, but he was going to turn it into a religion also. And the Catholics were, he was in competition with them for their souls.
Kind of. I mean, later in the war, this was not at the beginning, but certainly during the war, Hitler had actually had asked his SS minions to look into first kidnapping and then possibly killing the Pope. Mm-hmm. This was because Hitler understood that the Pope was a very powerful figure. If anybody could really oppose him, spiritually, if you will,
sure,
you know, if anybody could reach the minds and hearts of millions and millions of Europeans, it was certainly not Stalin, Churchill, or Roosevelt. It was the Pope. And therefore, Hitler understood he had to get him out of the way. He also understood, however, that he couldn't just get him out of the way. It's not like he could just shoot the Pope and be done with it, because he understood that if he had done this, he would have actually gotten hundreds and hundreds of millions of Catholics and possibly many hundreds of millions of Protestants to revolt against him. The Pope was a very powerful figure, just like he is today, but he was even more so back then because Europeans were much more religious than they are today. And therefore, the Pope, who for them is a holy father and a vicar of Christ, was a very important figure, much more than a bishop or anyone else. So if Hitler had killed or kidnapped the Pope, he would have actually found himself with a massive revolt everywhere. And this included, of course, the many millions of Germans who served in the armed forces. They would have revolted against him, because, for them, religion was more important than the Nazi ideals.
Okay, so if it would have happened, then it would have really came back on him. So for him, it was a good thing that it didn't happen, not that he realized that in any way, shape, or form. I think when I take a very deep look into this, and most people who do, you've got, Catholicism is a religion, Judaism is a religion, Muslim is a, it's all religions.
Yeah.
And at base, it's all about God. It's all about spirituality in one shape or form. And I still can't imagine to this day why one spiritual person would want to kill another spiritual person.
Well, it goes to you have to understand the there's a very ancient background to hatred, and in order for any genocide to happen, and this is generic, not just to the Holocaust, but in order for any genocide to take place, at the very least two things need to happen. One of them is there has to be a pre-existing hatred. People need to be motivated to get rid of somebody else. So that's precondition number one. And precondition number two is there has to be a state behind it as well, either motivating people or inciting people or providing material or any other kind of support. So if you look at any genocide in the history of genocide, you will see that these two preconditions are always there. In the case of the Holocaust, the hatred for Jews, was definitely pre-existing. It was very prevalent and very visceral, and had been instilled in the minds of people long before Hitler, and Hitler really pushed that all the way to the max.
Sure.
So that was, precondition number one was already there. And then the other thing that the Germans did is they actually put the full support of the state behind it. Initially, in the form of propaganda, in the form of passing laws against the Jews, in the sense of basically dehumanizing the Jews in art, in the way in museum exhibits, in every single possible way that they could do it, they did it. So, and then, of course, once the war began, then things became really nasty, and then, of course, murderers at that point.
Now, were any Christians helping Jews during the Holocaust?
Yeah, there were. There were quite a few, probably thousands of them. There were many Christians that were helping Jews as regular individuals, regular neighbors,
sure,
if you will. There were some people, some members of the clergy as well, who helped Jews. Even some bishops, particularly in France and other places, even some churches like the Danish Lutheran Church, who helped Jews.
Now, by the way, Gabriel, are we talking about now that it was the politics of the church as opposed to the Christian members of the church? If you've got thousands of people helping Jews during that period of time, we can't say Christians. I happen to be Jewish, by the way. But it wasn't. So would it have been the church? Would it have been the politics of the church? Would it have been, I'm going to call it the bureaucracy of the church?
Well, there definitely was the bureaucracy of the church. Keep in mind also that even though there were thousands of Christians who helped Jews during the war, there were millions that did not. Even though there were, quite a few thousands and only accolades can be given to these people, however, they were a drop in the ocean compared to the millions that hated Jews and helped the Germans by either denouncing the Jews, by chasing them, even by killing them, because, you know, keep in mind that the Holocaust was orchestrated by the Germans, but was not perpetrated exclusively by the Germans. The Germans, when the Germans actually invaded most of Europe, they found many, many willing executioners, to use Goldhagen's expression. They, you know, in France, for instance, a very Catholic country, the French police, not the Germans, not the SS or the Gestapo, the French police was the one that rounded up, arrested, and helped in the deportation of all the Jews of France to the death camps. In the Ukraine, in Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, in all these different various places, it was the local people who volunteered and participated in the mass murder by killing Jews. They volunteered. They just went there very willingly, and they were given weapons and schnapps, and they just killed Jews.
A little liquor. And now, by the way, in your book, you suggest that the Allies should have established an international trial and put the churches and some of the members of the clergy, they should have put them on trial.
Yeah.
No, but they wouldn't. And was it because it was the church that caused them not to?
No. The Allies didn't even try. I mean, I make the suggestion that after the war, you know, the Allies, of course, set up the Nuremberg trials, and they were going to do, that was to the high command people, and then they were also going to do another second trial to the industrialists. And I'm suggesting in the book that they should have done a third trial and put members of the clergy who were guilty of crimes. They didn't even attempt to do the latter. They didn't try for probably various reasons, and probably among them was the fact that the Allies, the hierarchy in the Allies were Christian, and they probably believed that the churches or people in the clergy were, you know, outside the law, if you will. They you know, were above the law. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who would think of putting a bishop or somebody like this on the dock?
True. I mean, there's no question about it. And by the way, what you're saying, that's for the most part with a lot of people, it was common knowledge, but they kept it under the table. They kept it under wraps and really didn't talk about it because it was all supposed to be Hitler. And we didn't really take a look at what goes on, you know, and go back many, many years ago, go back to the Crusades. I mean, you got people killing people, one religion against the other religion. You know, I can understand, for me, myself, I can understand a country going to war with a country. But to this day, I still have a problem with a religion going to war with another religion.
Oh, but it actually is very simple to understand. Once you understand that in the case of Catholicism, for instance, the Catholic Church actually preaches that there is no salvation outside the church. That's one of their dogmas.
True.
So once you believe this, and remember, if you're a very religious person, when you're talking about the word belief, that means that's the way it is. It's not something you question. It's not that there's shades of gray. That's what you believe. So if you believe that there is no salvation outside of the church, that means that anyone that is not Catholic is going to hell. And in Catholicism, since we're talking about Catholicism, but this is also true for other religions.
Sure.
It's a very important part of their religion to go and proselytize and convert the others. In Christianity in particular, they have another dogma which says that salvation will come once they convert the Jews. So For Christianity, and this has been true for many, many centuries, although, you know, today this is no longer so important, but certainly was in the past, Christians proselytize to Jews because they believe that their salvation will come once those Jews are converted to Christianity. And in order to achieve this, for many centuries, they tortured Jews. They basically forced them to go to sermons, to conversion sermons. They put churches outside of the gates of the ghettos where they had been imprisoned, basically. So they were very keen in converting Jews.
Now, by the way, interesting point. So if I convert, if I'm during that period of time, if I convert, then I'm saved. But did it still save them from the Nazis?
Because from the Nazis, it didn't. Because for the Nazis, as opposed to for the church, you know, for the church, Once a Jew converts to Catholicism or to any of the branches of Christianity, they are already a Christian. So the from a Christian perspective, baptism converts you. However, the Nazis didn't conceive of this way. Nazis, of course, believed in the concept of race, and they believed that a Jew was a Jew even if he was baptized by 100 bishops. So
you couldn't convert then.
I'm sorry?
You couldn't convert.
Well, you could convert, but it didn't make any difference.
Yes. Okay, so, yeah, we're saying the same thing, sure.
Even converted Jews were deported and killed by the Germans. It didn't make any difference. Unless they could prove that their great-grandparents had converted. But if they had converted, or their parents, or even their grandparents, if any of their generation or two generations back had been Jews, then they were Jews.
Hmm. By the way, we're starting to run out of time. Let me ask you this, Gabriel. Is there a website we can find you at?
Absolutely. The website is www.6millioncrucifixions.com. That's the word six. And, of course, the title of the book is 6 Million Crucifixions, How Christian Teachings About Jews Paved the Road to the Holocaust. And it's available everywhere, but mainly online.
Well, and Gabriel, thank you so much for joining us. I've appreciated the time. And this is the information that people really need to know.
I agree.
Okay, take care, and thank you for being here.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I can only give you love that lasts forever, and the promise to be near each time you call. And the only heart I own for you and you alone, that's all, that's all. I can only give you country walks in springtime,